Lesson 2. Thinking versus Feeling. It's getting late. You and your small team of commandos are behind enemy lines, and your task is to stop an imminent attack by your enemy. From your twilight perch on a distant ridgeline, you look down through your binoculars to see that they have amassed an almost inconceivable number of men in armored vehicles, and you discover that they are preparing to attack your side at dawn. Witnessing this force, you realize that there is no way your troops will be able to withstand this assault, and that you must prevent this attack at any cost. You cannot directly engage this force with your small team, as you would be quickly overwhelmed by their superior numbers. So you take out your map to find the solution, a choke point. You realize that as formidable as this force is, there are areas of weakness that can be exploited. Armies need logistics to operate, food, fuel, and ammunition. They also need command and control, communications and intelligence data. All of these could be disrupted by your small team, but your map quickly gives you the answer you're looking for, a long bridge crossing a wide river valley that their forces will have to use to reach yours. You see, you don't have to destroy the entire army to stop the attack, only exploit a choke point that can affect the outcome of the situation. This is exactly what has been and is being done to you. Those who do not have your best interests at heart are masters of psychology and social engineering. They know where your choke points are and how to exploit them. The time has come for you to post guards on those bridges. The late great comedian George Carlin was a master of communicating ideas. He used comedy as his vehicle to illustrate human absurdities in a playful but meaningful manner, causing us to look inward and challenge our accepted belief systems. His witty quips and quirky expressions added to his message, but he would always stress the importance of language. How we use words and phrases represents not just what is being directly said, but also our intentions and emotions. It is a window into the thoughts of the speaker. In Lesson 1, I made the statement that measurable results give you actionable data, feelings do not. This is not to say that feelings do not play a part in decision making, but they should never be the final criteria. Is it wise to buy a house that you cannot afford because you love it? Should you punch your classmate in the face because they made fun of you and hurt your feelings? Of course, emotions are real and absolutely affect decisions, but they only represent a state of being in a snapshot of time. Happiness now does not guarantee happiness a moment from now. If you have ever witnessed a Hail Mary touchdown pass to win a football game, you know that despair can turn to euphoria almost instantly. That does not seem like a reliable way to make choices that can have long-term impact and effect. Not too long ago, there was a subtle change introduced to our language, and it went largely unnoticed by the masses. Those who would exploit understand that language is a choke point for humans, and that by disrupting it, they can also change how humans think, or more to the point, how they feel. The next time you are talking to a friend, browsing videos, or watching television, make a mental note when someone says, "I feel like." Not so long ago, this phrase started to appear in the language in place of "I think." You may have noticed this in phrases like, "I feel like this is unfair," or "I feel like this doesn't really represent the full issue." Let's pause for a moment and restate those same sentences, but substitute the word "think" for the words "feel like." Instead of "I feel like this is unfair," use "I think this is unfair." Rather than "I feel like this doesn't really represent the issue," say "I think this doesn't really represent the issue" to yourself. Do you see the difference? Thinking represents reasoning and rationalization. Feeling does not. Thoughts can be documented and debated. Feelings are personal and are gone the moment they end. Simply writing down a feeling does not give you that feeling, but a thought is different. If you can lead people to form their opinions with a feeling and emotion, you can effectively stop rational thought. Do you see the choke point? An example, the race of life. Not so long ago, I was having lunch with a younger colleague. He was explaining a lesson that he had been presented in a class he was observing. The lesson was called The Race of Life, and you may be aware of it. If you're not familiar with it, let me give you a quick abstract. A teacher lines up several students at a starting line. Let's call it a datum, If you don't know what a datum is yet, go back and watch Lesson 1. With a finish line some distance away parallel to that starting line. These students represent different physical characteristics in race, gender, athleticism, etc. The teacher then points out that it is unlikely that a student that does not share the same physical advantages as an opponent will be competitive in the race. The teacher then asks the students a series of questions, like if their parents had attended college. He then proceeds to move some of the students closer to the finish line based on these perceived advantages of privilege, making the race unfair. The teacher then goes on to promote the idea that this represents the privilege granted to some in life, and has the effect of creating guilt and outrage among the students, eliciting an emotional response from pupils who have now been led to view an entire life as based on unfair advantage. After hearing this, I looked at my younger colleague and asked him the following question. Is your family wealthy? He responded that they were well off and had a high standard of life. I then asked, is your family directly descended from ancient royalty? He looked at me quizzically and stated that no, to his knowledge, they were not descended from any form of aristocracy. Then where did the wealth come from? I asked. My colleague paused. I asked another question. Have you heard of the concept of opportunity cost? Not being an economist, he replied in the negative. I explained that in economic theory, opportunity cost represents a concept that a sacrifice of a perceived immediate value now will lead to a greater value in the future. I then asked another question. Since you are not a descendant of wealth and privilege, is it fair to say that at least one, or more likely many, made sacrifices in their life to give you the opportunities you have today? In essence, did someone else take that burden so you would not have to? After thoughtfully considering my question for a few moments, his answer was mesmerizing. He went on to relate a personal story about his grandfather. It seems that he was a door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman who started with nothing. He worked hard and sacrificed for years and was eventually rewarded with promotion to executive leadership of the company. He had earned everything he had achieved through his hard work and sacrifice. He shared this earned fortune with his family so that his children and grandchildren could have a better life and not have to endure the humiliation of having a door slammed in their face. As a result, his grandchildren started their lives in a place of better opportunity. He could have given himself an easier life, but he deemed that the opportunity cost to his progeny was too high, so he took the burden upon himself. My colleague then said he had never considered that idea before, and my response to him was simply that that was because he never thought about it. I paused for a brief moment and then asked my final question. How do you feel about the race of life now that you've had a chance to think about it? This is how social engineering is accomplished, and most are not even aware that it is happening to them. The more you are encouraged to feel about issues, the less likely you are to think about them. Consider your opinions on the following volatile topics: climate change, socialism versus democracy, economics, social justice. Now consider that for wherever your opinion may lie on the spectrum, there is someone who holds the opposite view just as firmly. In fact, let's make this even more interesting. Wherever you lie on the spectrum, there is someone with more expertise in that topic that holds the viewpoint opposing yours. If you become unmovable, unwilling to rationalize because you feel like you are in the right and they feel the same, how do you ever find common ground for mutual benefit? Are you starting to see what's been done to you? Humans are going to disagree because we are individuals on an individual journey. It is an amazing gift. But the irony is that we can accomplish even far more amazing feats in groups than we could ever do alone. So knowing this, how can we reconcile our disagreements, especially in this time where it seems impossible to achieve this goal? Back to lesson one. You establish a datum, a place from which to measure, and by thinking, not feeling, you establish criteria to measure success. Yes, there will and should be debate about the criteria. But I think you can handle that. One last bit of advice. Stop using the thoughts of others in place of your own. Even wise men can be wrong. Time moves on.